Hello, my name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. Today's our guest on With Respect is Rabbi Misha Kapustin. Rabbi Kapustin has been our guest in a prior show, and we talked at that time much about his background, his history, how he got to be in Slovakia as a liberal rabbi. But today we want to talk about experiences that both he and I have had with different kinds of discrimination and the effect that that has on us and on our families. And also, I'd like to talk about some things that bring us together. So, with respect, we are speaking to Rabbi Mikhailo, or Misha, Kapustin. We'll be right back. Misha, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good. Well, I look forward to talking to you again because it turns out that you have a very fascinating background, which we dealt with last time. But I just sort of a recap, I'm just going to bring things together. You are the son of a Soviet naval officer who retired moved with you and your family to Crimea, which is, Crimea is a peninsula which extends into the Black Sea and the southern part of what was the Soviet Union and is now part of the Ukraine and part of Russia, whatever. But it is a very important geographical place for the Russian people because of its long history in trying to find a warm water port for their navy. But it's also a place of great beauty, but also great geographic barrenness in some ways. But you were, after your education in London, as in rabbinical studies, and you almost became a lawyer. We'll talk about that again. But you settled and took a post in a synagogue in Crimea. And things happened. And as a result of those things which happened, which we're going to be talking about, you chose to leave. You were forced out of Crimea and ended up in Slovakia as a rabbi, a liberal rabbi, in Bratislava, which is the capital of Slovakia. So there, that's the basic. You're married to a lawyer. I love it. And you have I think it's two children. Am I correct?
Yes. Everything is correct, and yes, I do have two children.
All right, there we go. Now we've set the stage. But all right, now we're back in the time when you were a liberal rabbi in Crimea, and things happened. 2014 was a difficult year for you, for many people. Tell me about that again. Set the stage again.
Look, usually in Crimea, we had a very slow life, I would say. Everything was going on slowly. It's just a region within Ukraine. And look, but compared to the United States, everything is slow almost everywhere. But in those 2 or 3 weeks, which I experienced in Crimea, everything was going on very quickly. It was changing every minute. And and that is why I kind of had to react very quickly. So the same night when the Crimean parliament was taken by military men, the same night was attacked our synagogue where I used to serve in the capital city in Simferopol. For the first time it was attacked that way. So an unknown man got through the fence and draw swastikas on the front wall of the entire of the building, and he wrote "Death to Jews," and he also drew a Ukrainian nationalist symbol. But what was interesting, I've never heard about that symbol, so I started checking out what kind of symbol it was. And then I realized that it was a Ukrainian nationalist symbol, but which was drawn in a mirror projection, meaning that the opposite way, like it looks in the mirror. Mm-hmm. And I believe if a Ukrainian nationalist wanted to draw his symbol, he would know how to do it correctly. So I had certain doubts that it was done by the Ukrainians. I believe that it was a provocation from the opposite side, but I do not have any proofs. It was told that somebody got caught, but I don't believe in their justice. And and for the first time, I had to cancel the services for the safety of the people who go there. We decided to cancel all the activities and services to wait how the situation will be realized.
Well, now, prior to that night and prior to the events of the seizure of the Ukraine or the Crimean parliament, what was the relations like within the community that you were serving? Now, by that I mean not just your Jewish community, but rather the community as a whole, with Jews of all different stripes, but also all different stripes of Christians and other sorts of groups. How would they, day to day, how did people get along or not get along?
Look, it was very vibrant. It was very different. With regard of the Jews, obviously, there were different, there are still different Jewish organizations in Simferopol or in the entire peninsula. I was traveling a lot within the region and visiting different Jewish organizations and serving as a rabbi for them. And within Simferopol, there were different organizations. There was also an Orthodox rabbi born in the United States and who was very Orthodox-minded man, very Orthodox. But nevertheless, I could talk to him. I could call him anytime. I could come to his house. And even he could come to my synagogue, although he didn't regard it as a synagogue in his own means. And so I could communicate to different organizations because I believe that, look, ideology is very important, but the priority is what human being is. So meaning that are you able to speak to that particular human being? And then as a secondary thing, you would say, okay, he has a different ideology. Okay, he belongs to different background. But firstly, humanistic. Mm-hmm. And as a humanistic, I was trying to be like it sometimes even as a mediator between two Orthodox organizations. And look, it depends on human beings. And I tried to be so-called in Hebrew, Rodev Shalom. Rodev meaning shalom, it's clear, it's peace. Rodev meaning the one who follows the peace, or the one literally who, I would say follow. It's the better way to explain the word. The one who follows the peace. So for the sake of peace, I could sometimes didn't say anything, or sometimes I would put it in different words. So that was the idea, and people appreciated it. So I was controlling my emotions, controlling my words, And that's why I didn't have problems being in the Crimea. I was happy there. And I didn't want to move forward to a bigger place, to a bigger synagogue. That wasn't my ambition. I was happy there. And finally, with regard of different identities, look, there are over 100 different ethnic groups in the Crimea. There are three major religions there, different Christian denominations. Obviously, the major religion there is Russian Orthodox. Then there are also different Protestant groups. There is Ukrainian Orthodox group. There is Roman Catholic, it's a minor group, but still exists there, I believe. And a large Muslim community there, mostly the Crimean Tatars. Look, I was involved in interface dialogue, formally and informally. I could come to the chief Russian Orthodox priest, to a patriarch of Russian Orthodox in Crimea anytime I wanted. Anytime. I just needed to say, okay, I'm coming. And when I needed to see him, I could come and see him. But I spoke to him openly all the time. So when he was given a word saying, look, these Muslims, they're not happy with that we're putting crosses at the entrances, when the road enters the town, but it's important for us. I said, look, I realize that it is a Christian country. I realize that it is, that you have a majority here. I do realize it and I respect it. But when you enter school and start doing your rituals with all the kids, and some of them are Muslims, and some of them might be Jewish, obviously I wouldn't be happy about it. You should know this. You should be very careful about it. You should talk to parents first, and then the priest could do whatever he does. It's how it should work. It should work like that, because you're not 100%. That's how it works. But regarding the cross, I said, no problem. It's your land, it's your religion. I don't mind about them. I'm not going to deal with this. It's not my problem. It doesn't disturb me at all. And when the Muslim community had a problem, somebody wanted to burn, I believe some radical groups, pro-Russian, but it wasn't proved, wanted to burn a place which was supposed to be a great mosque in Simferopol. They wanted to burn it. I was one of the first ones who came to see the Mufti of the Crimean Tatar. It's the highest position for the Muslim world there. And I just to tell him that I'm on your side. If you want me, I can speak openly about it, because that's not correct. It shouldn't be done like that. Today it's with you, tomorrow it's with us, another day it's going to be with somebody else. We should follow the justice, the normal relationships between people. It's how it should be. And so obviously I just wanted to tell him that the Jews are on his side. And that's how it was. And obviously, there were different radical groups from the pro-Russian groups. There were pro-Muslim groups, I would rather say not just religiously based, but I believe ethnically based groups. But they were marginal. They were marginal. They didn't look that like there was a danger. At least it wasn't on the news, it wasn't on the streets. So in general, people could coexist, normally coexist, different ethnic groups and religions. So I felt comfortable there. Being a minority was okay for me. It wasn't a problem, it wasn't an issue.
But at some point, and we're going to get into this further in a bit, but at some point it became an issue. And you started. You've described that man who came and put the swastikas on your synagogue, and a Ukrainian national sign not properly set up, but rather a mirror image, like they didn't know what they were doing. But that point, things changed. And I'm going to take a break now, but we'll come back and we'll talk about that change. But I also want to talk about not just the problems with anti-Semitism and anti-other groups, but how we can bring ourselves back together as a group, as a family of humans, respecting differences, but also dealing with the tensions that come up. So we'll be taking a break right now. This is John Smetanka. We're on With Respect, and we're talking to Rabbi Mikhailo Kapustin, who is a liberal rabbi in Slovakia, but originally from the Crimea in the former Soviet Union and the Ukraine. We'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Mikhailo Kapustin, who is a rabbi of the Jewish Federation of Slovakia. But we've been talking about his experiences in the Crimea back in the period of 2014, when there was a takeover of the Crimea by groups, and next finally by the Soviet, by Russia. So, this is John Smetanka. Now, Misha, that night, did you recognize the person who put the swastikas on your synagogue?
Obviously not. They had video cameras, so we could see that there was a man, but it wasn't clear who it was. Obviously, he was hiding, that wasn't clear, his face wasn't clear. And it was just, we could see that it was just a young man. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the police started investigating, but in those times, obviously, it wasn't a priority because the things were changing so dynamically. And obviously, I believe it wasn't a priority. And then, in several months, I heard that that man was found. But I, as I said, I don't really believe in that justice. So I don't know who it was.
Right. So at some point, though, you made a decision that enough was enough, and that you needed to leave. After that swastika painting, what else happened that finally put you over the edge and said, I've got to get out of here?
Look, I realized that the history is repeating. And I realized that the world is going towards a new Cold War. It looked so. And I just didn't want to stay on another side. That was my main issue. And look, some medias wrote that I had to leave the Crimea. I had to leave Crimea because of anti-Semitism. No, it's not true. I'm not afraid of anti-Semitism. I'm not afraid to stand against it. Obviously, I'm not a knight. I'm not going to show my face during the fight. It's not like that. But just to follow all the legitimate sources. But it wasn't the main issue. It wasn't about anti-Semitism in those times. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't want to bring up my children under different circumstances. I wanted to live in a democratic country. That was my main issue. And I had certain doubts about democracy in Russia.
Mm-hmm. Now, so we know from our last discussion that you got on a train with everything you had, your possessions, your wife, your children, and went off and eventually got a position in Slovakia as rabbi in Bratislava. Have I basically walked it through?
Yeah, look, when we left Crimea, we expected that I would get a place in Western Ukraine, where we also had our communities, and my wife could easily change her work and starting working for another Ukrainian company there. So she was a professional, so she could also find a job there. So, but it was too complicated. The negotiations started, and then I just realized that they're not really looking for a rabbi there. I mean, look, it wasn't me who was making a decision. I could only accept it or not. Mm-hmm. And finally, I got a call from Slovakia. So at that time, I didn't have any particular plans. And Slovakia was first who invited me. It was interesting since when I got to Slovakia, in several months, I got another job proposal, but I didn't really go into detail since I keep my word. Since I promised to stay in Slovakia, I stayed in Slovakia.
So what is your perspective now? It is now several years later. You're now established in a parallel position in Bratislava, Slovakia, as a liberal Jewish rabbi. You had some perspective, some distance in time and location from your experiences in 2014 with the Russian takeover of Crimea. What are your perspectives now on the relationship between the various groups that you mentioned before? Because right now you're in Bratislava. It's not a Jewish country. It is a primarily, I guess, Christian country or humanist country or non-Christian country, whatever. But what are the relations like that you're in right now? How do people get along with one another?
Look, in Slovakia, it's very interesting. It's a very interesting country. The absolute majority of the population are Christians. And for instance, compared to Czech Republic, it's a more traditionalist country. Mm. But on the other hand, compared to Poland, it's a less traditionalist country. Mm. So obviously, the Roman Catholic religion is the most popular direction of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And besides, there is also Greek Catholics as well. It's a huge, they're relatively numbered in Slovakia. Besides, there is, I don't know, up to 10 to 15% of the population are Protestants, mostly Lutherans. And if we're talking about the Jews or the Muslims, we have about 5,000 people both. Possibly there are a little bit more Muslims than the Jews. But for instance, in Slovakia, there is no mosques, and Islam formally is not regarded as a religion, which means they do not get support from the state, which means that they do not get, they are not allowed to have their own cemeteries. They are not allowed to make certain things. They do exist. They have cultural societies. They do services there, but they rather exist as a cultural or as a social group, not as formally not as a religious group. Obviously, it's clear why the government does it, but it's, I would say it's not fair, but it's how it is. And the Jews, we have infrastructure. We have 12 communities there in different places. It's also unique from the Jewish perspective, since usually we have several communities in one town. Doesn't matter how many Jews, but there should be at least two communities to have a choice. But here, after the Second World War, it was decided that the numbers of Jews were dramatically decreased. So it was decided that in one community, in one town, will be only one community, one congregation, which would unite different Jews independently of their personal beliefs, whether they're Reform or whether they're Orthodox. And then the community, by the democratic principle, will decide which way to follow. And so it's how it is. It's still like that years and years after, even decades and decades after.
Well, now, Central Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, all have had a history going back to the to Nazi Germany and before, of tensions and violence among the communities, and certainly, absolutely, in the case of the Holocaust. But do you see the same kinds of tensions that existed before, say back in the days of in the 30s or the 40s or the 50s, does that still exist today in, say, Slovakia or Crimea?
Look, it's hard to say. It's hard to speak about Crimean reality since I'm not there, and the sources of information are doubtful, so I wouldn't mention them. Mm-hmm. So I would speak about, from my perspective, I could easily speak about Slovakia since I live here and I'm a part of that life. So, look, compared to some countries, the situation in Slovakia is relatively good. Look, because there are two major dangers for the modern Jewish community in Europe, which are the Islamic fundamentalism. It's not about religion. It's about particular groups who associate themselves within that religion. And on the one hand, and on the other hand, mostly right-wing groups who stand against the Jews. So they are so-called neo-Nazis or ultra-nationalists. Mm-hmm. As for me, they are not nationalists. As for me, because nowadays you put another meaning to the term nationalism. It's not like in the 19th century when nationalism was a positive thing. Nowadays, nationalism is a negative thing thanks to them. And and also there are left-minded groups, ultra-left-minded groups, who would say they are not against Jews, but we're against Zionists. But they give an issue to the Jews who live in diaspora. They verbally attack them for the sake of the, as they were attacking Zionists. So as for me, it's not an anti-Zionism, it's anti-Semitism. So these are the three major dangers. And in Slovakia, we have, it's mostly about ultra right wing groups or even political parties who often make statements of anti-Semitic background and sometimes, but they have good lawyers, I must admit, really good lawyers. In most of the cases, they win.
Okay, so I'm going to take a sidelight and talk about lead into one other thing I want to mention. That is, this sort of discrimination or hatred of groups other than Jews also exists. And an example, and a long-lasting example, my mother, went to school in southern Michigan when in high school. And it was a Catholic school run by some nuns. And when one night the students woke up and there was a giant cross burning on the lawn, set up by the Ku Klux Klan, apparently. In that year, they had in that particular community 15 different cross burnings that they were against Catholics. They were also the Ku Klux Klan and other groups were against Jews, and they were against blacks, and they were against foreigners, immigrants, and whatever. So there was a strong, active groups, group of haters. And they reached their peak probably in the 1920s, but finally started dying off as a large political or social movement. But my mother remembered that night with the burning cross as something that she never forgot. It just was imprinted on her soul that people, why would people not like some harmless women running a school with little girls? I mean, what threat are they? She remembered that, and when she told us of this, that we could still see the effect on her long lasting. And I want to come back and take a break now, but I want to ask you, what effect has these experiences that you've had on your kids? The next generation, did they have they forgotten all about it? Do they still remember bits of it? So we're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Rabbi Mikhailo Kapustin, who is a rabbi of the Jewish Federation of Slovakia. And we've been talking about prejudice and anti-Semitism and now anti-other groups. And we'll be right back on With Respect. This is John Smetanka. Now back on With Respect with Rabbi Mikhailo Misha Kapustin, and he is a rabbi of the Jewish Federation of Slovakia, and we've been talking about the relationship of the Jewish community in Eastern Europe and Central Europe to the rest of the community. But I want to get very personal, because I know my mother was affected by the sort of the horrible thing about cross burnings and anti-Catholicism back in the 1920s in Michigan. And I'm just curious, what effect has it had on your kids, if you discuss this?
Yes, I will surely answer your question. And I believe, but let me start with something else, something to my mind clever, which I heard from one rabbi. The rabbi was just thinking about current situation within different world religions. And he said, look, there is a lack of something. What you are talking about most? For instance, the Christians, they mostly speak about love, but there is a lack of love among the Christians. The Muslims are talking a lot about peace, but there is a lack of peace among the Muslims. The Jews, they're talking a lot about unity, but there is a lack of unity among the Jews. As for me, it's very clever, because we keep talking about it, but it's not enough. And to talk is important, but it's even more important when it becomes implemented. With regard of anti-Semitism, look, personally, I experienced anti-Semitism, and it was my first Jewish experience ever. Almost my first Jewish experience ever. When actually It was in Russia, in the Ural region, where actually I was born, and time to time I lived there with my grandmother and my mother. And as any boy child, I had friends. We used to play football, hockey together. In summer we played football, and in winter we played hockey. And we used to play different games. We were kind of close to each other. But one day in spring, I was told by them, look, Misha, you're a good fellow. You should know this, that the Jews are drinking blood and the Passover is coming. So be careful about what you eat, because you come from the Jewish family. They wanted to do their best to tell me in advance, so be careful what you eat, because there might be blood in your food, blood of Christian children. So that I was 8 or 9 years old then. So I came back home asking my mother, so we're Jewish, okay, so we drink blood, is it kind of our job description, what we have to do? Obviously, that's how I realized I was Jewish. I keep remembering it. I believe the guys who told this have forgot it, but I keep it in my mind. And obviously, I've been to different anti-Semitic situations. I recall when I was a captain of our team when I was in high school. It was a history team, so there was a competition, and I was good at history, and I was elected as a captain. And then was another team with also good with another good leader, I would say, a smart girl, and it happened to be that we lost. So okay, I said, okay, possibly I made a mistake, it happens. And then I got from one of the participants of our team, I got a message, clear message, why we lost, because I was Jewish, and so on. But look, this type of situations happen. Recently, I received different notes from anti-Semites saying how they hate me, and it happens. But with regard of my children, they certainly know that they're Jewish, because we follow a Jewish way of living at home, and they visit synagogue, they come to communal things, so it's not a secret for them. In contrast to me, when I was a child, but they've never ever experienced anti-Semitism directed towards them. I realized that it is temporarily. And time to time, I realized that we cannot prepare them. But time to time, we mention them. You know, that there were the Nazis who wanted to kill all of us. And if you live there, that time, that most probably they would kill you as well. So, you know, some people hate the others. It's not correct. It shouldn't be done like that. But we're human beings, we're not perfect. Obviously, we should fight it. But the most important thing, think that you shouldn't be afraid. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, you shouldn't lose yourself. You shouldn't lose your identity, especially because of them. Otherwise, they would win. You don't want them to win. So by keeping your identity, you win. And that's as simple as that.
All right, this leads me to something which has been on my mind for quite some time, which is there is a common heritage that all of the major religions we've talked about theoretically has. That is, we have Jews, Christians, Muslims, all the groups you've mentioned so far. There is, if not a common scripture, there is at least a common belief in a unitary, a God that holds us, created us, and holds us to, in the palm of his hand, so to speak. That is, we're all part of the same community, really. We live together, we worship separately, but there's a commonality. And one of the things that has struck me recently is that the Psalms that are what we call in the Old Testament, the 150 Psalms as we have it, is also part of the Jewish scripture. And I think similar, I'm not sure about the Muslim community, but I do want to talk about the commonalities that we do have as exemplified by the Psalms. Where do they come from and what are they? And you have much more tangible contact with that than I do, but I have some interest in it as well. So what do you think?
Look, before I start talking about Psalms, I'll say a couple of sentences with regard to different religions, which I mentioned. Obviously, there are much more religions, and I deal with some of them within the matters of interfaith dialogue. But I mentioned specifically these three religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, since they're so-called Abrahamic religions. So now I'm going to talk about the Psalms. Look, the Psalms, it's the way to express your someone's personal experience in a nice, very much poetic form. Who wrote the Psalms? Obviously, there is a traditional point of view that some Psalms were written by King David, some Psalms were written by King Solomon. There is a so-called biblical, from the point of view of biblical criticism, Psalms were written in absolutely different periods of time by different people. Some Psalms are written in early times, early biblical times, as one of the first biblical texts. Some Psalms were written later on. So I believe it's a question of a personal belief, which way to follow. But from my point of view, the most important is the message. It's not who wrote the Psalms, but what's written in the Psalms. That's the key point. And in the Psalms, you could find almost everything. You can find love, you can find hate and hatred. You can find hope, you can find depression. You can find almost everything, as I said. And obviously there are some Psalms which I daily read as a part of liturgy. Some Psalms are read specifically for particular festivals. And obviously, they actually, I would say that it's one of the points which unite, in a good way, unite the Christians and the Jews. Yes, we're different. It's not good. It's not bad that we're different. It's fine. I'm happy with that fact that we're different. But obviously, some things are common. It's not only the general things which are common for all human beings, but in particular Psalms.
I will tell you that one of my favorite Psalms is the 23rd Psalm, which, and by my calculation, which is, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want," is the way it begins. And I will tell you that each line in that means a lot to me in my personal life because of its touching on peace on in times of trouble and making good decisions in one's life and moving on in a direction which is positive. But in addition to that, that particular psalm, there are so many others, as you've talked about. Every human emotion, every human situation that can come up somewhere is found in a psalm, or in sometimes four or five into a particular psalm. Desperation, I'm being attacked on all sides. Everybody seems to be against me. I'm drowning here, I'm drowning, help me, I need some help. All of that stuff, all of those things which real people daily go through, especially in this time of pandemic, we are forced within ourselves to isolated. And the more isolated we get, I think the more desperate some people become. In fact, that is probably going to be one of the things that comes out of this, is that we may have, in fact, an increase in things like in suicides or depression. But the whole point of this is that there is, as you say, a uniting factor. We are all human beings. We all, what is it, if I'm cut, do I not bleed? I think one of the Shakespearean phrases that, one of the plays, I cannot remember, but it's a fellow who is Jewish, as I recall, in this play, and says, look, I'm the same as you guys. I am the same as you guys. And so, you know, cut me some slack here, man. We're part of the same human race. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about what brings us together and how to minimize those things which tear us apart. This is John Smetanka. We're on With Respect, and we're talking to Rabbi Mikhailo Kapustin, who is the rabbi of the Jewish Federation of Slovakia. We've been talking about a wide range of things, dealing with the relationship between Jews and their community, Jews and Christians, Christians among Christians, Muslims, and all of us trying to get along together. I will be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Rabbi Mikhailo, also Misha Kapustin, who is a rabbi of the Jewish Federation of Slovakia. And we've been talking about a wide range of issues, religious, secular, human, historic, and whatnot. So this is John Smetanka. We're on With Respect, and we're going to deal now with some more of the effects. How can we bring together, if it's possible, people of different perspectives using the commonality of scripture, or in our case, the Psalms? What do you think?
Look, let me just quote a verse from your favorite Psalm, and then I will continue with this idea. As it says, though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no harm, for you are with me. You know, in Hebrew, I used to sing it as a verse, as a song. It became a song in Hebrew. It's a powerful sentence. And it partly could be an answer to your question. First of all, yes, we are all mortal. And as one clever rabbi said, wise man, who said that you should repent a day before you die. Since nobody knows when one dies, we are all mortal. And there are still no proofs that we will resurrect to another life. We should care about this particular life and do not leave it for possible other lives. So we walk in the shadow of death, but first of all, we shall not be afraid. Second of all, we should realize that there is somebody who, whatever we call him or her, is above us, but not just above us, but with us and within us. And then it's up to us how we're going to deal with this. Shall we disregard it, or shall we count on it, count on him, and count on ourselves? In particular, what can be done? First of all, there should be essential things all human beings should agree on, which are the value of human life, which of it's the first thing. Second of all, it's very nicely was expressed by one rabbi who lived 2,000 years ago. His name is Hillel, and he said that when one man came to him saying, look, in those times Christianity wasn't a religion yet, a specific religion. So that man came and said, look, I will convert to Judaism if you explain me what it is while I stand on one leg, meaning tell me what Judaism is all about in one sentence. So Rabbi Hillel told him, do not do to another one what's hateful for you. The rest are the commentaries. Go and study. That's it. As simple as that. We shall not do to the others what could be regarded as harmful, as hateful for ourselves. And it's the basic thing. Third of all, we should learn from each other. We should be respectful. It's like your program with respect. We should realize that there are other human beings with their own customs, with their own traditions, with their own religions, but they're first of all human beings. In Christianity and in Judaism, we say that a human being was created in God's image. In Islam, it's kind of complicated to put it that way, but still, they do believe in the sacredity of human life as well as we do. Which means that we should respect other human beings and we should deal with them based on their actions, not on their thoughts, not on their practices, which are not harmful for the others. That's the point.
I think I'm impressed on this. I'm standing on one leg and you did it. you did it. Now I can put the other leg down now. But seriously, I'm going to tell you an experience that I had. A lawyer friend of mine here in Michigan died. He was Jewish. And quite a few of us went down to a memorial ceremony for him at a synagogue in another state. And there was a woman who was the rabbi performing the ritual, the service for his death, his life and death. And she was so powerful by in her quiet way, a way of peace and wisdom that, and by the way, she used as a focal point in her memorial statement, the 23rd Psalm, the Lord is my shepherd. It was so powerful that as we were filing out of this, at the end of the ceremony, there was, as I say, maybe 100 people there. A couple were walking out ahead of me, and I heard him, the man, turn to his wife and say, wow, that woman is great. I want her for my funeral, and I'm not even Jewish. But it was a very powerful lesson to me in just the commonality that we have, and I hate, maybe I don't like the word commonality, but it's the best I can come up with. We are all humans together. That you can't change that. You can if we have two legs and four and two arms and whatnot, if we don't have a leg and arm, we're still human beings. And so that particular message that came through to me has never left me. And this was years ago.
It's a powerful message, I must admit. First of all, I'm sure that if that rabbi, if she heard about the words, obviously it would please her. Obviously, look, it's a personal thing, and one cannot be a rabbi for everyone. And they'll also have it in common that one is looking for himself or for herself a rabbi that would suit him personally. I believe the same works in Catholic world as well, because priests are very different, and one could be good for one particular man, the other one would be good for another party, for another human being. So you see, it's humanistic first. But another thing which unites all of us, we are coming to this world the same way, all of us, independently of our ethnic or religious background. And we are living this world approximately the same way. What's also interesting, I often mention it when I run funeral services, I often mention this particular thing that when I come to a cemetery, I better realize about our life than in any other place. Why? Because when I could see what's written on the tombstones, tombstones in different cultures are different, but very often we have the same thing, which is the date of birth and the date of death. But I realize what's our life when I look at these particular things, because I can see life in between of these two dates, which is what? A short, very short line. That's our life. The dates are huge, and the short line in between, the dates are huge, large, and the line small. That's our life. And I realize that when I come to a cemetery, it reminds me that the life is short, and there are so many things have to be completed. And it's not my words. I'm just paraphrasing the words of another famous rabbi.
There is, in these days of COVID, there is an increasing sense of isolation. Friends of mine have been talking about this for weeks and months now. The more we are isolated, and what I have found in forcing myself, for example, to go out and to touch base with people that I haven't, they might have seen in ordinary life, but I haven't seen them because I'm isolated or they're isolated. We need to touch each other. We need to touch, whether it's verbally or with pictures or mostly with conversation. If we can't touch each other physically, we need to touch each other as human beings in whatever method of communication we can, because we are, whether we like it or not, products of a whole long line of other people. And we have relationships all over the place that make us, for better or worse, the people that we have become. And we need to, I love your way of expressing it, that the line between our birth and our death on the tombstone, the little hyphen, that we call it a hyphen between the two dates, is so short. When you consider the history of the world, we're just a sneeze when it comes to our life. And Spartan, when you talk about tombstones, there is a funny one. In America, tombstones are sometimes used as bits of humor. And out in Deadwood, South Dakota, there was a tombstone which said, all it said was, "I told you I was sick." And there was a famous comedian who said, when they asked him, "What do you want on your tombstone?" He said, "Altogether, I wish I were in Philadelphia."
Anyway. Yeah, it's funny, but it's so childish. Yes,
it is. Misha, this has been a great delight talking to you. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I've learned a lot from listening to your perspective on life and the Psalms, and I hope that so my audience has as well. Thank you very much for your time, and my best wishes to you and your family.
Thank you for inviting me. You're right. Time is precious, so I'll stop talking.
All right. The name of our program is With Respect. We're on every week. And remember, until next time, if you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you.